I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. There's concern that too much opinion is meshed with facts in the media these days, and it could be jeopardizing journalism. Americans are questioning how much they should trust the news they're getting. Today, our media critics look at the blurring line between news and personal judgment. They'll also examine the columnist who resigned for not interviewing a source and local reporters who have sued media outlets in this town. Then, four local middle school students teamed together on a science experiment picked to go to space. We'll learn more about their project and how these budding scientists earned this special opportunity. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. How possible is it to separate good, honest news these days from good, old-fashioned opinion? A lot of consumers of the news now see no difference at all. We're about to talk about this with our media critics. We'll also talk about the Steve Rose saga that Dan Margulies just talked about and the Kansas City Star. This stems from a column that Rose wrote for the newspaper that resulted in a state senator suing the newspaper for defamation. With us to talk about all of this are our media critics. Dana Wright is co-host of Dana and Parks, heard each afternoon on KMBZ. Dana, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Peggy Lowe is the investigations editor with Harvest Public Media, based here at KCUR. Peggy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Michelle Tyrene Johnson is the race, identity, and culture reporter here at KCUR. Michelle, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I should point out that I'm a member of the Star's editorial board. And for our listeners, how much opinion is getting interwoven into the news you come across each day? How much opinion is getting mixed in with the facts? Give us a call, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Let's start with this blurring of news and opinion, at least so many consumers see it these days that way. Dana, what's your sense from doing your radio show each day? How much trust do people have in the news they read or hear? What's your sense?
It's very scary to me that it is so low.
Yeah.
And I believe in the last few years, the internet has fueled some of this. I've always said, my husband has always said, we do a great job of telling other people's stories in the media.
Yeah. Chris Ketch, the anchor at Channel 9.
We do a horrible job of telling our own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is the need to educate the public about what is fact.
We're not transparent enough, even though we demand transparency.
Absolutely. What is fact? What is opinion? I like to tell people, if you're just a layperson, a casual news viewer, if you are watching television and you see four people in a box screaming at one another, that is usually an opinion-based show.
That'd be your first clue,
not
right?
Not exclusively.
Yeah.
But we have entered into this bizarre, very terrifying realm where I ran into a woman a couple of years ago who fervently believes that Sandy Hook did not happen because she saw that on the internet. And my jaw about hit the floor.
Right.
This is a mom who lives in Kansas City, and we need to get a handle on better explaining the difference between things that are actually put out there that are fake to promote some horrifying, awful agenda.
Right.
What is news when you tune in and listen? Are you getting news or are you getting opinion? And then the social media arm of this is that people are now free to share and retweet and keep this awful train moving down the tracks when something is, in fact, false. And so as journalists, everyone has to be very careful when they are stating something as fact that, A, it is fact, and B, is it recent? I see a lot of this where people will put a story out. Look at this pileup in Iowa. That pileup was 6 years ago. And this is on all of us in the media business to be very, very careful. We have very little room for error these days because the trust is so eroded.
Michelle, how do you see this and this notion that maybe we're not transparent enough about how we do what we do and we need to sort of engage with our readers and listeners a lot more than we already do?
Well, I think part of it, I mean, I agree with everything that Dana said. I do.
But you better, or she gets very angry if you don't.
But I also think that the onus is on people to do due diligence about what they read. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a Pew Research study showed last year that 68% of people get their news from social media. Okay, their news. Well, you know, it's on you to click on an article and look at the date.
And make sure the car accident that Dana just mentioned wasn't 6 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that is my pet peeve. I've even seen a few former journalist friends who will put up old stories without providing any context. And they go, well, it's still true. And I'm like, yes, but you need context if something is old,
mm-hmm.
because things can change. And we've all have enough to be stirred up about without being stirred up about something that happened 6 years ago. That's my point.
Yeah.
You know,
Peggy, is there an issue here, a broader issue with the commingling of news and opinion? Are you seeing opinion find its way into news stories? And let me just further add that the media has been pretty aggressive when it comes to pointing out misstatements, lies, if you will, from President Trump in a way that we haven't seen with former presidents. Republicans, backers of the president's of the president, take great umbrage to this. And yet this crusade to point out fact from fiction from the president goes on among mainstream reporters all the time.
I believe it's mainstream reporters' duty to call out fact from fiction. I think they were slow to do that in the beginning. Mm. I remember an imperative that came down from NPR that said, we can't call some of the things that President Trump is saying lies because lie implies intention.
And you don't know what his intention is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we've all kind of moved beyond that, and some have just said lies, using the L word. That said, we're certainly not getting any help from the president himself, who, when he hears something he doesn't like, he calls it fake news. I despise that term.
Mm-hmm.
It just hasn't helped at all. That's confirmation bias. That's he says what he doesn't like, and so his followers will then say it's not true.
Yeah.
And that's pretty appalling.
I'm with you. I don't even like it when people joke about that and go, oh, fake news. I mean, I just hate that phrase is even in our consciousness as something because people have bought into that. But it mm-hmm. doesn't help. You know, now this is where I do think the media is a little bit complicit, is even on like simple news stories on TV. And I'm an old school journalist. I was a newspaper reporter a long time ago, and then before I made a detour to other professions. And so when I see even TV anchors go, sad story today, so-and-so was killed and blah, 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 blah. Right. You don't really need to say sad story. Mm-hmm. Just tell the story and we can all be sad or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw one on Twitter last night where a news anchor in another part of the country wrote, I love this story. And the link was about an organ donation after a horrifying car wreck.
Mm.
It's little things like that. Yeah. When I saw that, I just cringed.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah. Say anything else. Yeah. You know, please look at this and put it in the context of organ donation or this is important, but I love this. And the photo that accompanied the story was six crosses on the side of a highway.
Yeah.
We have to be better because, again, we do not have the benefit of the doubt right now.
Well, we are still left with the mainstream news media having, as you know, people say they have as much trust in what we do as they do in pimps and hookers these days. I mean, that's really what it's come down to. There's a huge crisis of faith and confidence in the news media. How does the mainstream media go forward from this point? What's the answer?
Well, pimps and hookers are less sanctimonious than journalists in general, and that's part of it. And I think that's what people pick up on when they're doubting and questioning the news.
Mm-hmm.
But I would suggest that there are several outlets doing it very well. I think NPR is. I think The Washington Post is. I think The New York Times mm-hmm. is. And actually, despite the fact that those polls are suggesting these low numbers, the revenues of The Post, NPR, and The New York Times have never been higher.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting more listenership and more readership day after day because we are keeping the line with the truth.
I would also say I think local content continues to drive and be critically important in every single community. Like right. everything local affects you more. And I love the New York Times and they do fantastic work. But the Kansas City Star is critically important to this community. Mm-hmm. The television stations are critically important to this community, despite flaws with all of us. And I think if I could tell the public one thing at the local level, because when people think news, they think MSNBC, they think Fox, they think right. CNN. When you look at news at the local level, there is this misconception out there that we all sit around in a room at the beginning of the day in these editorial meetings trying to figure out how to get the man.
Right.
We are gonna how can we put a liberal spin on this tax rate hike or on the pothole crisis we're seeing in Kansas City right
yeah.
now? And I have always said to people, I have sat in those meetings for years and years, never once in my 26 years now has anyone ever said, man, how can we put a liberal spin on this?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that people see Fox News and they think Fox 4, which is also not true. Those discussions at the local level do not happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't happen. But let me just say, and this is where I do get why, in particular, disenfranchised groups I've always doubted the media. So a lot of times when people talk about doubting the media, that's majority demographics who are suddenly doubting the media. You know, people who are in minority groups have always had a bit, you know, looked askance because there are institutional biases. You know, even people don't have to go into a news meeting, for example, and express a bias because most people don't even realize they have it.
Right.
And so the positive of social media, which can get blurred with regular / professional media, is, you know, I always say about social media that this is the first time in the history of the world of creation that everybody's on an equal playing field with how they get to have either opinion or fact mm-hmm. come to light. And that gets messy for folks who were trying to separate opinion from fact. But, you know, that's part of the privilege of having everyone have access mm-hmm. to information and opinions versus the filtered access that regular media has always provided.
You know, speaking of opinion and fact, and speaking of your earlier point, Michelle, that consumers carry some responsibility to sort of navigate the media landscape here in some proper ways, the Pew Research Center last year found that people have so much trouble telling the difference between fact and opinion. Pew found that participants were more likely to classify both factual and opinion statements as factual when they appealed most to their own side.
Yeah.
So that's how surprising is that, right?
Not at all.
But that says something. If folks can't tell, most people apparently can't tell basic fact from basic opinion here.
That's right. For instance, my 85-year-old mother who lives in Nebraska, she gets all these emails forwarded to her. Most of them like from Fox News because the majority of her friends are conservative yeah. in the small town.
Right.
And she will call me literally and say, Peggy, is this true? What about this? And we
yeah.
do like a little fact finding mission, my mom and I, like once a week. And so it's really hard to hear. And again, we just do a really bad job, you know, transparency wise of saying, this is what we do. This is the fact. This is not.
Well, and some of the websites have gotten very crafty at hiding their intention. Some of them, certainly not The Onion. If you see The Onion, please mm-hmm. understand that that's satire.
Right.
But there are some new websites that do present outlandish, ridiculous things as fact. Most of us understand this is satire. This is funny. I've had relatives post those things with, can you believe this article?
Right.
And mm-hmm. I don't know how you talk about responsibility, Michelle. I don't know how you teach the difference. I don't.
Well, here, Pew asks people, spending on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid make up the largest portion of the U.S. federal budget. Fact or opinion? That's a fact. They also asked this, is this a fact or an opinion? Democracy is the greatest form of government. Well, that's an opinion. You may believe that to be true, but it's still an opinion. Most Americans, according to this poll, couldn't discern
between the two,
and that's a problem, it seems to me.
Well, maybe we need to go back to even the middle schools or the high schools. You remember back in grade school having, is this a fact or is this an opinion?
I mean, I don't mean to be mean, but I just think that sometimes it's just following the trail of common sense and just never relying on one thing. I guess that's my thing.
Yeah.
Is like if I read something and I have a strong emotional reaction to it, good or bad, whether I really agree with it or whether I it makes me mad, I immediately start Googling to see what's out there. So mm-hmm. if there are five stories from reputable sources that confirm what I just said, if the New York Times said it, if ABC News said it, if, you know, yeah. The Guardian said it, okay, I believe it. But if I can't find anything but blogs who say it, who've repeated it, who've reposted it, then I'm like, you know, maybe I better be careful before I share it.
How much responsibility do we have to correct people on social media who get it wrong?
Oh, I, you know, don't ask me because I'll correct you in a minute.
I do it all the time.
Okay. Yeah, go to Snopes. I would always say, look, Snopes has done this. This isn't actually true.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to a different topic here with our media critics this morning. It's the Steve Rose controversy that we talked about at the top of the show. Steve was a columnist for The Star who wrote this column a few weeks back criticizing Kansas State Senator Jim Denning's opposition to Medicaid expansion. He implied he had interviewed Denning recently, but that turned out not to be the case. The Star terminated its relationship with Rose. And obviously, I work at the newspaper again. So Denning has sued the paper. Lots of guns blazing in this thing, Peggy. What's your takeaway from this thing?
The first thing that came to my mind and remains at the front of my mind is, what was Steve Rose thinking?
Yeah.
My God. Mm-hmm. And according to court filings that Dan Margulies, who was here during the news hit, has reported on, Colleen Nelson, the head of the editorial board, questioned Rose when he first turned in that story without naming the senator. And Colleen mm-hmm. said, we have to have a name
have
on
a name.
The senator.
Yeah.
And thank God she did that. So he puts it in, and in the lead it said, Denning confessed to me. That is the verb he used. It was super strong right from the get-go. Turns out, we don't know when he actually talked to him. And he read between the lines. And I know there's a lot of, you know, back and forth in, as far as lawsuits. But what was Steve Rose thinking?
Michelle, what's your take here?
You know, I was a columnist for The Star for several years. I had a Diversity Diva column in the business section. And, you know, diversity is something where there's a lot of opinions to have. And I always have to make clear that it's my opinion. And once I start talking about what somebody else said, I better confirm it every way from sideways.
Especially if he's a state senator.
Or have notes to back it up,
yeah.
At least.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was like fifth grader-ish. It was, you know, so amateurish.
Because the problem is that if he's saying that he spoke to him, that he said it, but it was a year or two ago, is I think that's part of the facts. I mean, especially if he's now saying it was at Houlihan's restaurant. I mean, right. Was that a social occasion? Was it drinking? Was it a social occasion? Was it an implied off the record?
And
was
has that opinion changed in 2 years?
And has the opinion changed in 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
Mm-hmm. I would also say, just from a legal standpoint, I agree with everything you have said. From a legal standpoint, my first thought was, the bar is so high. I have worked in newsrooms that have been sued. We had attorneys on retainer. I know where that line is, and I know what the law says. The bar is so high to prove actual malice,
yes,
with a public
true.
Figure.
True.
And I'm not excusing how this work was presented at
right.
all.
This could
but the
just
bar,
be sloppy.
The bar is set very high when it comes to public officials for a reason.
Well, the U.S.
You
Supreme Court
has
set
yes.
that bar high for a reason to yes. encourage robust discourse in the
yes.
country. But still, getting back to trust in the media, this is sort of a shot across the bow once again to how much credibility mainstream news outlets have when these things happen.
But that's
right.
That's where ethics come in. Ethics aren't about, I mean, I'm a former lawyer. Ethics aren't about the law. Sometimes the right thing to do isn't what you do because the law protects you or the law gives you cover.
But this gives an opening to Denning to attack the Star, and he has.
He has.
And he says it's politically
yes.
motivated. And I actually, in this place, I don't think it was politically motivated at all, at least by the Star, certainly. I mean, Colleen was trying to do her due diligence in editing that piece, and this is Steve Rose's sloppy, sloppy, amateurish mistake.
And for people who are barely paying attention anyway, it does not help
Exactly.
Our cause.
Yeah. Again, Steve Rose, from his standpoint, says Denning made the argument some time ago, and that what troubled the star is that the conversation with Denning was not as recent as the wording of the column may have implied. That's the issue here, right?
That's okay. The issue here.
Let's move on to the Jesse Smollett situation. A quick recap here. The actor, Jesse Smollett, reported to police that he was assaulted in Chicago, where he lives, by two men who yelled racist and homophobic slurs. They put a rope around his neck and poured an unidentified substance on him. Social media lit up immediately over the news, and his claims that Jesse staged the attack surface. Sides were drawn rather quickly. Michelle, how much, you know, has social media overshadowed the actual reporting in this case?
It's completely overshadowed the reporting. I mean, for those of you who may not know, I'm Black. And so between my diversity work, being a Black woman, having a wide variety of friends, having a lot of gay friends, it was like immediately the thing that people were posting about, to the point where if you see 30 posts on something, it almost overtakes the one article you see, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the bigger problem with social media in terms of the media, is that balancing act between reaction to news as news itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I constantly am on people for this. Like, where'd you hear that? Where'd you read that? Who told you that? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. How much culpability does the media have in getting out in front of this story too much, taking Jesse's word for it? Is there an issue there?
I think, and this is where I have to walk, you know, because I'm careful, this is where I have to walk the line of my personal opinion versus, you know, being a media, an objective media critic, mm-hmm. is I think I worry more about the police's, what they're putting out there, than I do the media, because you know how all of us are in the media. We take what we get and we run with it. Yeah. If somebody official tells us something, then that's the story.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most frustrating things, and our show has just, people want to talk about this story. Mm-hmm. Every day they want to talk about it. One of the most frustrating things I hear is, why don't you just wait until all the facts come out? Well, we cover trials before those cases are adjudicated. Mm-hmm. Is that not waiting until all the facts come out? We cover all sorts of things on our opinion-driven news program. And the facts in the beginning were, you talk about facts, they were facts. He said he was assaulted by two men. That is a fact.
Right.
Chicago police immediately responded and said, we are scouring every corner store for surveillance to find those responsible. That is a fact. All of these things were reported. Then you get the social media side. Do you believe him? I think the media did a very good job in the beginning of reporting, this is what police are saying.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
This is what he's saying. And so for anyone listening, why don't you wait till the facts come out? Would you have everyone just ignore one of the biggest stories that everyone is talking about because we don't know?
Right. I agree with you on that score, because I felt like in the initial reading of the stories, when I first got word of it, all the stories were very safe and very careful. You know, the alleged victim said this, the cops say this. But everybody went on social and went to town. Kamala Harris, you know, jumped right on it. A lot of conservatives jumped right on it. And so those folks said things on social media that confirmed their own bias.
You know, in an age of Twitter and Facebook, I mean, how fair is it to expect the media to be able to outpace and get ahead of social media rumors, because social media runs wild and media can hardly keep up?
And that's my point. That's exactly my point. I mean, you could have 100 news outlets reporting factual, actual information. But back to what you're saying, Dana, if everybody's talking about it and giving opinions, I mean, that's the biggest problem I have with social media is, as much as I love it, I hate how everybody thinks they're an expert on all things because they have an opinion. I mean, if people are conflating their own opinions with facts, how can we expect them to discern the media's facts?
Yeah. Even the president of the United States weighed in on this right after it happened.
Right.
A lot of politicians weighed in and said, this is horrible. and you know, to the media's credit, and to everyone certainly my age and older, I remember Matthew Shepard. And so God bless that child. When I hear of something happening like this, whether it's race-related or a slur or an assault or an attack against a gay person, we don't in the beginning have any reason. We have this history of awfulness that we have seen and reported on. Can you imagine in the very beginning of this attack if someone had come out and said, well, I don't believe it?
And here's the problem. It's not a history for those of us who live the reality as non-white, you know, my friends who are non-straight. It's not history for any of us. And so one of the big discussions I'm seeing on social media, which is separate from the news, is how, oh my God, this may make all of us look bad. Well, that's majority people saying that, because does anybody think that if Jussie Smollett is lying, that means that every hate crime is manufactured?
Of course not.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to leave our good conversation here with our media critics, and I appreciate all of you coming in today to talk. Dana Wright, co-host of Dana and Parks, heard each afternoon on KMBZ. Peggy Lowe, investigations editor with Harvest Public Media. Michelle Tyrene Johnson, the race, identity, and culture reporter here at KCUR. Thanks for a good conversation here, guys. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk with the KCK students who are sending one of their experiments up to the International Space Station. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, how Walmart's fight for much lower property taxes for big box stores could financially hurt Johnson County. It's called the dark store theory, and you can hear about it at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, weather permitting, a conversation with Kansas City mayoral candidate Scott Wagner. We'll talk with the 1st District Councilman and Mayor Pro Tem about his ideas for economic development, funding pre-K, and reducing violent crime in Kansas City. Well, it's not every day that middle schoolers can say they're placing a science experiment aboard the International Space Station. But that's exactly what's happening in Kansas City, Kansas, with 4 students from Coronado Middle School. The students won a district-wide competition between 9 middle schools that had more than 1,200 students working in teams and submitting proposed experiments. The focus of the experiment, growing mint leaves up in space. With us, Erin Morley is the Coronado Middle School science teacher overseeing all this. Erin, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Steve. It's nice to be here.
Unama Amayo is a 7th grader at Coronado Middle School. Nice to have you. Welcome.
Hello.
Carlos Jimenez Reyes is an 8th grader at Coronado Middle School. Carlos, good to have you too.
Hello.
Well, what was your reaction when you found out your team's experiment was picked to be sent to the International Space Station?
Well, I was very excited, and some of our teammates were shocked.
Yeah.
And it's not every day an opportunity like this just shows up.
They were shocked because why?
Because it was difficult on some parts that we thought we couldn't win in, but yeah, we went through them.
Yeah. Unamo, what was your reaction?
I was shocked. I couldn't really say anything. Like what Carlos just said, it was like a lot of it was pretty tough to do, but we got through it, and yeah.
Hey, what did you do when you got the word? Were you jumping? I mean, were you yelling? What did you do?
So when we had got the word that we had won, I was in class. They pulled me out of class, and we were in the commons area, and we were talking. And I was just sitting there, and I was dumbfounded, really.
Yeah. Did you start yelling or anything?
No.
Yeah, you just were too overwhelmed by the whole thing. Yeah. How about your teacher? Did Erin, did you start jumping up and down?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Maybe they weren't, but you were.
I was so excited. Yeah, yeah. We let everybody know, and we were jumping all over the place. We have 2 other fellas on our team, and one of them was just, as he says, jumping up and down like a Mario Kart. Was that what he said? He was pretty excited about it.
Yeah. You know, Unama, you said that this was difficult. What was difficult about this particular experiment that you're proposing for the International Space Station?
It was really the proposal itself, because a lot, like, we dedicated a lot of time and stuff into the proposal, and it was really something that was trial and error, because every time we had sent it in, like, we were done, they always found something to give back to us and say, no, you have to correct this before we send it up. So, yeah, that was what made it difficult.
So they kept you guys hopping?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you have doubts, Carlos, that maybe the thing wasn't ever really going to happen?
Yeah, I did have my doubts.
Yeah. And what were the folks asking you guys to correct over and over again? What kinds of things? Aaron, hop in here.
Okay. I think the type of proposal, honestly, was above probably anything that 13, 14-year-olds have ever had to do. Ah. So it was really some difficult work. I think when we first brought it to the table, they were doing sort of what I would expect 13-year-olds to write about. And then, of course, the people who are in charge of reading through needed it to be more scientifically accurate, so they would ask us to be more specific about scientific names, about what specifically every single step would be in the process from the moment that it would enter the space station, what the exact timing of shaking the tube that they're sending it up into would happen to, how many seeds they were going to use. So it was very, very intense. Wow.
So they really pushed you guys, Carlos. This was not easy.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's turn to the experiment itself. What was the experiment? What are you guys proposing to do exactly?
We were proposing to see if mint can grow in microgravity.
Mm-hmm. And why mint?
Because during our research, we researched for a couple of days, and during our research, we found that mint is really good for calming and like just soothing the body. So we proposed mint for the benefit of the astronauts.
Mm-hmm. And explain how it calms the body and what it does.
I really don't know.
Yeah, but it does. Aaron?
Yeah, so some of the ideas that they had, the tube that they had to work inside of is very small, so they had to think small for what kind of experiment they were going to send into space or what could possibly be done. So first they were thinking about crystals, and then they began to think about seeds, and they came across mint seeds. They wanted to do something that would be helpful to the astronauts, and they did some research on some of the benefits of mint, some of the herbal benefits, and they decided that that mint would be something that could organically, without medications, could help calm stomach problems, could help be soothing in space, and also because of the ability to grow mint without much light.
Did one of your students just stumble across this as he or she was doing some research here?
Well, actually, as we were looking at different things, our other two members, Daquan and Dale Sean, and Unima and Carlos, they were sort of just looking at different types of seeds. And I think we just started talking about all the different types of possibilities that they could have used. Carlos, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, we were looking through the seeds and we were trying to find out which one was better for the situation that we were going to.
Yeah, yeah. And mint sort of stood out to you as you went through it then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it true this is the first year a school from Kansas City, Kansas has won this competition?
Well, up to this point, yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of a big moment then.
Yes.
Yeah. Gear Up, a college readiness program from the University of Kansas, sponsored this year's competition for KCK schools. How did that help, Uma, as you look back on it?
It really helped because during winter break, that was crunch time because we had sent our proposal. At this point, we were like top, we had made it to the top three in our district. So now we had just had to correct everything, like just make the final edits. And during winter break, Gear Up provided a workspace for us to work. And yeah.
So you're saying you were working on this over winter break?
Yeah.
Was that hard for you to do?
No, not really.
Not really?
No.
You could have been playing, though, and having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of dedication amongst your students here, Aaron.
Oh, absolutely. I've been so, so very proud of my guys. They've been really dedicated to this project to this experiment to the idea. They've put in so much hard work and effort, and I could not possibly be more proud of them. And I do just want to say, we would not have had this opportunity if it were not for the GEAR Up program.
Explain what GEAR Up is.
Yeah. GEAR Up is a college readiness program through KU that is working with the Kansas City, Kansas public schools, and they start from 7th and 8th grade, and they move along with the students every year, getting them ready for college. And this was one of the many activities and opportunities that KU GEAR Up has provided for us. And we just sort of took it and ran. We thought, what an awesome opportunity. And so we were able to, all of the Kansas City, Kansas middle schools were able to participate. And we did have two of the finalists at Coronado Middle School. And then we did, of course, amazing. Have the winners as well. So, but the opportunity itself would not have been possible without the KU GEAR Up program in STEAM Village.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking this morning about Coronado Middle School in KCK that is sending an experiment up to the International Space Station. Carlos, how are you going to send Mint up to space? What kind of container, what's that going to be like?
It's a special type of plastic that can survive the launch. It's small.
And it's really strong plastic, I gather?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty long, too.
And so you don't have, you had to confine your experiment to a very thin tube. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah, because there's other experiments that the space station is going to be receiving as well here, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unima, how would you describe it, what it looks like?
The tube is like 9 inches long, like the whole tube is 9 inches long. So we had to divide the tube up to fit our experiment. Like one section is going to have the actual seats and the other part, then the two other sections are going to have like the plant gel and the formalin.
Wow. It's plant gel. And what was the third word you said?
Formalin.
And what is that?
It's a fixative. Its job is basically to stop the mint from growing on the way down from the space station.
Oh, I see. So this is pretty complex stuff. You're already over my head, and I'm like older than you, I think. You know, it's kind of embarrassing, you know? So, but this sounds pretty neat. You must be really excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You all started on this project in October of last year. What did the beginning, when you first started out, what were you guys working on, Carlos?
What we were working on was what was our project going to be, which was originally crystals in space, but then we saw that was already done, and we didn't want to prove something that's already been done.
Mm-hmm. So you began looking around for something else then?
Yes.
Yeah. How much research did you guys do on Mint for this particular project, Unima?
Like, if I'm not incorrect, like the first month or so was like just research. Then, like, everything after that was writing's proposal.
Mm-hmm. Was this all, Aaron, all outside of class, or was it during class?
Oh, no, it was all outside of class.
All outside of
yes,
class.
Yes, they stayed after school. Myself, the KU GEAR Up team that has been with us the entire time, we would meet.
They actually come over to the school?
Yes, the KU GEAR Up team would come up over to our school. We would they would provide snacks for the students. We would be there from after school until about 5 o'clock on Mondays and sometimes Thursdays. And we started out doing experiments, just going through the scientific method so that they would understand what would be expected of them as they move forward.
Explain what the scientific method is for our listeners who haven't had a science class for a while. Yeah.
Well, Unima, do you want to explain what the scientific method is?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, they
it's basically trial and error, right?
It is, but what we talked about was that first we needed to come up with a question, and our question had to be about something that would be affected in microgravity, and it also had to be something that would fit inside, like I said, a small tube. So they needed to be thinking of really these micro experiments. And so the first part of the scientific method for them was to create a question, and then after they got a question, then they would need to make a hypothesis mm-hmm. about whether or not that would work or not, and do some research, see what they could find out beforehand hand, then begin to do some experimenting, analyze the results of that experiment, and then come up with a conclusion. And of course, we're not through with the conclusion yet because we have yet to take them to space. But they needed to learn about the scientific method itself before they could begin to understand where a project like this would need to go.
And so the bottom line is you want to grow mint in space so that the residents of the International Space Station could benefit from it for years to come.
Yes, that was what the boys proposed. They all decided that that was what they wanted to decide, but there's other benefits as well.
Yeah. Okay. Why do you think mint will grow better or just as good in space, Carlos? What's your thinking there?
Well, we thought that because, well, in our research, we found out that mint can grow with a little to no sunlight.
And, yeah. And that's obviously a big factor up in space then, right?
Yes, because they don't have as much sunlight as we have here. Because sometimes they go behind the Earth, which has no sunlight.
Okay. That's right. So mint made a whole lot of sense as you looked at it then. Yeah. We had one caller who called in to ask what were the challenges they expected to growing a plant in zero gravity. What were you thinking there?
The first challenge was obviously to find some way to not have the roots flying everywhere, because in microgravity, everything flies everywhere. So
how do you tie the roots down then?
That's why we have the plant gel.
Ah, so it sticks in the gel.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah, okay. So that makes sense, yeah. But zero gravity still affords a pretty good opportunity here if you do it the right way up in space.
Can you explain?
Well, you're just saying that zero gravity, you can still grow plants in space even though there's no gravity if you approach it the right way.
Yeah. It's all about the way you attack the problem.
Yeah. And again, it sounds like the folks from KU were sort of helpful in helping you guys navigate some of these big questions here, Aaron.
Well, they definitely helped us to have whatever materials that we needed, luckily. But the boys really did most of the research on their own. And then A-Steam Village also provided us with some materials to sort of look at how roots can grow in space as well. So we did have a lot of help from different areas. But I will say that most of the research about the project was the guys. You know, Dale Sean and Daquan and Carlos and Unima, they all equally put in the same amount of work.
So are you guys going to have a chance to watch the astronauts actually working with your experiment? Is there a two-way video possibility here where you'll actually see this going forward?
Well, we honestly don't know. They haven't told us that.
But you'd like to. That'd be kind of fun, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would be fun to see them, how they manage to take care of the plants up in space.
And to actually see them holding your tube way up there in space, that would be pretty amazing, right?
Yes.
Is that something you can find out? I mean, is that going to be a possibility?
Well, you know, we kind of find things out as they go. So we still don't know exactly the specific date yet for when it's going to go up into space. We know that it should be hopefully sometime in May or June, but we don't know some of the specifics, and that is one of the things that we're not sure about. We'd love to be able to see that and interact with them, but if not, then we'll just hopefully just hear a lot about it.
Yeah, Unima, how long will it take how much time will it take to test this experiment up there? How much time do you need?
So they're going to fly it up there in spring. It's going to stay there for 6 weeks. Then we're going to receive it back here at the end of the 6 weeks. Yeah.
How will it get back here?
They're going to fly it down here.
Oh, they fly it back, and yeah. So you'll be able to examine it at that point then, yeah. Well, do any of you, how has this work on this experiment changed the way you think about how you want to spend the rest of your lives? Do you want to go into science now, Carlos? Is this something that's more intriguing to you than it used to be?
Yes. Well, my opinion on science was more strict and not as fun as I thought it would be, but after seeing this, I thought maybe it opens some opportunities for me.
So science, you're saying, can actually be fun. It's not just hard work.
Yes.
Yeah, and this whole thing was a lot of fun, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah. Unama, how about you? How does it affect the way you're thinking about your future?
I'm not going to, like, the way I view it is, like, science is cool, just not for me, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't match where your interests lie. What do you want to do?
I want to go into law.
Okay. Well, that's sort of a sister to all this. Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever want to go up into space yourself someday?
Not really.
You don't?
No.
Why not?
I have a fear.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, it's kind of a scary prospect going up in space, right?
Yes.
Linema, you want to go into space?
No.
Yeah. Why not?
It's hard to explain. So I don't, because space is still kind of new, right? We've only been up there for not even that long.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that could go wrong because we haven't perfected everything yet.
Yeah.
So, no.
It's still a little too risky for you, it sounds like. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what will it mean to you if your hypothesis proves correct here and you actually can grow mint up in space? What would that mean to you, Carlos?
It'll mean that we can, that once we grow it, it can help the astronauts with medicinal benefits.
Yeah. And if you proved to be right, that would be kind of a cool deal, right?
Yes.
Yeah. How about you, Unama?
Can you restate the question?
How would, if you proved to be right, how would that make you feel?
It would make me feel good, because, like, if our seeds grow at all, it'll prove that growing plants is possible, and it'll be, and growing plants in space is necessary, because if we want to, explore space, we have to be self-sustaining,
right?
So we don't waste resources with resupply missions. It would be really, really cool.
Well, congratulations to all of you and your friends who worked on this. It sounds like you did some great stuff. And Aaron, congratulations to you too. Very cool story.
Thank you.
So glad
thank
to hear you. What you guys are doing here. I want to thank Aaron Morley again from Coronado Middle School, the science teacher there, Unama Amayo, a seventh grader at Coronado, and Carlos Jimenez Reyes, an eighth grader at Coronado. Again, good luck. I hope it all works out well for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, a conversation with one of the most highly regarded jazz vocalists. We'll ask Kirk Elling where he got his unique style and musical sensibility. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.